Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're in the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios in New York. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Tuesday night at 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific. Make way for what's next when CBS Sports Network brings you a WNBA showdown between the Washington Mystics and Los Angeles Sparks on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. Our toll-free line, 855-212-4CBS, is brought to you by Geico. Great news. You can save a bunch of money. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on car insurance. So the bottom line is the Raptors win the title, and now everybody wants to know, is Kawhi going to stay or go? Is he going to bolt? A lot of people think that he's going to go play for the Clippers, right? That's the flavor of the day. Everybody's on Kawhi to the Clips. And there's a lot of people that believe he'll stay in Toronto. And that if he stays there, they just keep winning. Because they got a really good team, right? They just won the NBA championship. And then people still don't believe it. They're like, oh, they won because Durant and Thompson didn't play. And you could, you know, think whatever you want about the injuries. The fact of the matter is they got the trophy to get the rings. That's it. It's over. Toronto won it. How do they keep him? How does Ujiri, who's got his own little nightmare going on right now with this problem with the Alameda Sheriff's Office, those idiots should just drop that. Just let it go. I mean, honestly, are you kidding me that this guy can't get on the court when his team wins the NBA championship and he's the head of everything? Are you kidding me? What kind of half-ass treatment is that, that this guy can't get on the court? Someone explain that to me. How does that guy that runs the team not have credentials to get on the court? Seriously, someone explain it to me. So now he's in trouble with the popo in Alameda County? Whatever. Here's the deal. What they should really start worrying about in Toronto is that they're offering that guy $10 million a year. Is that accurate? $10 million a year and ownership, a piece of the team in D.C., right? So he gets he becomes an owner, and he makes $10 million a year. It's like, it's, you know, John Gruden stuff, right? Not even Saban or Dabo makes that kind of money. 10 mil a year, if it's true, to go to the Wizards. What would you do, Mafia? Would you stay in Toronto after you won a championship? Or would you take 10 million and have an ownership piece in D.C. and have Wall and Beal still on your roster? And then what do you think Kawhi will do? So Ujiri and Kawhi.
I think them winning the title definitely helps the attempt to put Kawhi there. I mean, if you got knocked down the playoffs early, it's just the same as usual. Even though you bring this guy in, you make this big trade, you make the Gasol trade, things like that. Then, yeah, the guest probably says, you know what? Why am I going to stay here? Let me go home. Go where it's sunny. Go where it's nice because they got a better chance. The fact that you ran the East and now a lot of these other teams that you were competing with are probably getting worse, whether it's Boston losing Kyrie, whether it's Philadelphia potentially losing Tobias Harris and or Jimmy Butler. I mean, Milwaukee will probably be pretty much the same, but you handled pretty much everyone in your conference. You got a good chance to go back to the finals next year and repeat. I think them winning it and doing it against the Warriors and now with the injuries to the Warriors that pretty much knocked them out next year, you got a great chance to repeat. Why not do it?
So you think he's staying?
I think you got a better chance of him staying than you ever had before.
So
they won.
What do you think of the people that say that he should, you know, he's already won with two teams and got two MVPs of finals, and then now he could go do it. No one's ever done it on three. It's, you know, who is it? It's
LeBron and Kareem did it too.
So now this guy could go be the first to ever do it. Go play for the Clippers and try to win one with them. Now remember, their odds have skyrocketed. I'm not a big fan of this is just me, but I know some people get off on futures. You know what I mean? Like, oh, they're the favorites to win it all next year, and I come from the school of my ass. You know what I mean? Like, I don't believe any of that stuff ever. The Lakers are gonna win it all next year. Who's actually eating that sandwich? Are you serious? They haven't even done a deal yet, and they can't even make the playoffs, and they're gonna win it all. Shut up. I don't buy into any of that stuff. And, like, the Clippers have huge odds at 6-1 or something to win it all. The Clippers have never even smelled an NBA championship. Now, I think he would certainly make them a lot better. But I think I have a problem with, like, they're winning it all just because they have him. Toronto is so much more loaded with talent than the Clippers.
And the only reason those two teams are that high is because of the rumors, because of how it's pretty much thought that he's going there and that AD is getting traded to L.A. because of the maneuvers Rich Paul's made to try to get him there, whether it be telling Boston he's not going to sign and the demands that Griffin's made that most of these teams can't even, you know, get close to. Those are the only reason those two teams are up that high. I guarantee you come July 8th through 15th, whichever date that Kawhi signs, if he doesn't sign with the Clippers, they're dropping way back. And if the Lakers don't make that trade, if somehow the Knicks swoop in and make it, or Boston still has the guts to say, you know what, we'll trade our young players and take the chance anyway.
There's no way the Knicks are getting him.
Then odds for the Lakers are dropping way back.
What could they possibly do to get him?
I think they have very little chance, but I'm saying if the Lakers don't get him if he goes somewhere else, then they're dropping way back. Those two teams are only up there because of people assuming they're getting AD and they're getting Kawhi.
Well, I think they are. I think they are getting AD. I think Rich Paul, it is all inevitable that he's getting his boy, LeBron, his other guy, AD, together, and that's why they're favored to win the NBA championship, because everybody knows it's going to happen. It's not going to be the only team that has a shot at him is the Celtics, and he doesn't even want to go there. His agent doesn't even want him to go there. He said if they trade to the, you know, because I don't necessarily think that, the Pelicans want to deal with, you know, whoever. It's the agent has nothing to do with, in my opinion, who they want to trade him to. If they want to trade him to the Boston Celtics, they're going to do it whether Rich Paul likes it or not. And so he'll go there for a year, and then after that, he'll leave again. It is what it is. But what his plan is, obviously, is he wants him to go to the Lakers. And if the Lakers give him everything they want, the Pelicans, I think, will make that deal. I don't think my guess is he's going to L.A. He's not going to Boston. He's definitely not going to the Knicks. I don't believe that for 1 minute. Not only do I not believe the Knicks are getting him, I'm starting now to believe they're not getting Durant either, because Durant's done for a year. Everyone that keeps telling me that he's 31.5 opt-in, then he gets a 5-year supermax to stay with him, new building, stay with his boys, keep playing, keep winning. If Durant, Green, Curry, and Thompson, because Thompson's getting a supermax too, he's going to sit out till at least March or April, right, with an ACL surgery. He's out. Durant's out the whole year. I don't care what anybody says. The facts remain is that you know what they're going to do with that team, right? Those two are going to be out. They're going to play Cook more, Bell more, McKinney more. They're going to play Looney more. They're going to have Green, Curry going off. They have all the rest of them on that team that they can stick in there. Jarebko, every one of them. They're still going to be solid. They're not going to be kicking everyone's ass every night without those two and just dominating. I still think they can, you know, easily make the playoffs, easily be in even without them.
Right, they could be like a 5 or 6 seed in the West.
Easily. They could be as good as Boston was this year, where they were the 5 all year, and everybody kept saying, including me, that we're just waiting for them to turn it on in the playoffs, because I thought they were built just to play in the playoffs, play the Bucks, whoever. But I think it's the same thing. So if he stays there, that makes the most sense to me. So my point is that if he stays there, the Knicks get nothing. I said to a guy today, and everyone I'm sure will laugh at me, at the end of the day, they're going to have R.J. Barrett, which is kick-ass, and then what they really have is nothing besides R.J. Barrett. So you got Moutier, Smith, Mitchell Robinson, R.J. Barrett, and I believe they're not getting Kemba Walker either. So here's the deal. I think that they should, believe it or not, I've heard some people say, wait till 2020 to do this. But in the interim, I would go get Randle, listen, you can say whatever you want about him, but Julius Randle is a badass, and he's violent. Like, he's no joke. Straight to the rack. Every time he gets the ball, the guy goes to the rack. He scores. He's like, what? I mean, look at his numbers. You pull him up. Pull him up. He had a great year in New Orleans. He was always tough with the Lakers. You can't even deny it, right? You can't even deny it. He got even better with the Pelicans. The guy had a career year. And they need someone that's rugged and badass, like, you know, Larry Johnson-type player. That's what Randle is, if you ask me. Would you disagree with that, that guy can physically ball? Mafia and Santa Butcher, tell me the truth. Do you think he can ball?
Randle this year, 21.5 points
and a 12?
Game. 8.7 rebounds and 3.1 assists. He shot 52% from the floor.
I mean, that is kick ass. I thought he was more like 21-12 and 5. And I didn't know he shot 52% from the floor. Mavi, that's staggering numbers for him. Because look at his career numbers. I bet they're not that high.
15 points a game. Rebounds are about the same. And he was up a little bit in assists this year, too.
Okay, so up and everything. Up 6.5 points per game on average. You know how hard it is to average 21.5 every night in the NBA. Do you know how hard that is?
It's really hard. Especially down low as a big man. When they're phasing that part of the game out and you get some of these other guys like Nurkic or, you know, Jokic, these other guys that can swat shots when you're down there. Great job for him.
I average 13, and it's like the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, trying to maintain that. You know how hard it is.
Right.
Some nights you have 18, some nights you have 8. And then try to keep a 13 a night average when you play once a week, not 4 games a week or 82 games. Try doing it over 82 games. We play 8 games, Mafia, and I try to maintain a 13 or a 14. It's brutal. It's brutal.
Especially because he's a guy that's he wasn't starting for them. He wasn't their main guy. He started 49 of 73 games.
Would you play 30
minutes a game. Like, that's not some of these guys that play 40, 38, 40, 44. Like, he played.
So do you have a problem with that?
I'll bring him in.
Like, would you have a problem with that move?
No, absolutely not.
Because they're going to
have him. I loved him in L.A. I'll take him here.
They already know that R.J. Barrett is there. That's a done deal. They're going to get him. So no one else is going to play for them. Durant's not playing for them for a year, even if they got him. It makes no sense to me. It really doesn't. Like, this whole talk the other night, do you remember Mitch Lawrence telling me, give him 4 years and have him play 3? Like, to me, that's stupid ass. Why not just get it? Like, if you're next year, so he got 31.5, then he can get a 5-year supermax from them, or he can get a 5-year supermax from the, or, you know, a 4-year deal from the Knicks or whatever. If he really wants to play for the Knicks, then he can go play for the Knicks after he's back from his Achilles.
After those young players are better.
But in the interim, would you not, listen to me, sign this guy? Honestly, I would, Randle, and then keep him. Can you imagine having Durant, Randle, R.J. Barrett, Moody A.
Smith Jr.
Smith, and Mitchell Robinson and Trier. Honestly, to me, that's solid.
It's a good young lineup.
Solid team. Solid team. Would you like Julius Randle on your team? If you have no other choice, what choice do they have?
Nothing. I mean, I'd take him right now. I mean, I'm a Heat fan. I'd take him on the Heat right now.
Boom.
We have no money, though, so we can't go do anything. Everyone's going to opt in and take their ridiculous
contract. So he's leaving New Orleans, right? Because they got Zion there, and this guy's unrestricted, right? He can go wherever he wants. I'm pretty sure he can leave. I think Randle's free to go and do whatever he wants. I could be wrong. That's the guy I would get because they're not – I mean, you got nothing with Durant, or you get this guy and he'll give you 20 a game, every game. Wasn't that what did Melo average, 20? He was worthless, but he gave you 20 a night. He didn't win anything. He didn't win championships. They're not going to win a championship with Julius Randle, but they'd have a solid guy that bangs, and then you'd have the big shot blocker in Mitchell.
Randle's under contract for one more year.
So he can't even leave there?
He can't leave.
Jesus, you got to be kidding me. So you're telling me he can't even leave there, so they'd have to do a deal for him. I thought he was a free agent.
I think it might be his option this year, and then he's unrestricted next year.
Okay, so, but it's his option?
I think he can opt into this year.
He can opt in for $9 million.
He can opt in, but he can't leave. Is that what you're telling me?
No, if he declines the player option, then he's free to go.
Saying he's going to leave. He's just going to decline the option and go, and he'll be able to go play for anybody. So here's the deal. I would go after him, I swear to God.
You're listening to Pharrell on the Bench.
So hoops and hockey are toast. What are you going to do? Pounce on baseball every game, every play, every day. PharrellOnTheBench.com has it all, even MMA and boxing. We're number one, PharrellOnTheBench.com. The best picks, the best price, buck a day, son. PharrellOnTheBench.com is on fire. Sign up today. Hide the money from your wife. So the great David Dusick joins us now from Northern Cali at Pebble Beach at the 119th U.S. Open, and we love the majors. Great golf today. I was watching the whole thing. I just think it's so kick-ass, and the fact that I'm watching golf at like 10, 11 o'clock at night and they're still playing is just phenomenal, and it's going to be that way all weekend. How about that round that Gary Woodland put together, David? And I got to tell you, that putt on the last hole, that 75-footer, whatever it was, that was just sickening.
He was absolutely out of his head, Scotty. It was a great day. You know, yesterday, Justin Rose shot 65, but it was a day when a lot of guys took it deep. And, you know, U.S. Open scoring conditions, we weren't expecting it to be quite as good on Thursday as when Rose went out there. But Woodland went out, and his 65, to me, is more impressive because – scoring conditions were tough. There were some guys who were able to put together some good rounds, but it was harder. The wind was up a little bit more. I can tell you from being out on the golf course, it was chillier out there. The ball just really wasn't moving all that well. And he putted absolutely lights out. You know, it's one of the things that you have to end up doing if you really want to play good golf and win a U.S. Open. And you saw him hitting putts, which has always been his Achilles heel. He's always been really, you know, strong guy, big off the tee, good with his iron play. But the putter is you know, really his downfall most of the time. And today it certainly wasn't, and you bring it up. You know, he finished really strong. He banked a couple of birdies. We have no idea what we're going to get weather-wise, if it's going to continue to get a little tougher and a little tougher. But at 9 under par, 68-65 is really macho stuff from Woodland for the first two rounds.
So how about the guy Enoch, who went from 78 to a 66, and he made the cut. He was like the last guy or something to make the cut. But you got to be kidding me, from a 78 to a 66, a 5 under round, that's a hell of an effort by that dude.
It's great. You know, I mean, a lot of guys end up getting on the wrong side of the draw, or they, you know, just get a little bit of the willies, and this is obviously his first U.S. Open, and it's hard. And there are a lot of guys who are good players. If you were to see them at your local club, and you'd be like, oh, my God, this guy is a total stud. And they just turn into just tapioca out there. They can't keep it together under these kind of conditions. When you're watching guys like Woodland and guys out there like Louis Oosthuizen today and some of the other ones who are putting together good rounds, and they make it look easy. It's not. It's really not. The conditions were really challenging. The golf course is challenging. There's pressure, especially on Friday when guys are trying to make the cut or put themselves in a position so that they can stay in contention. And some guys, it's just getting to the weekend. It's just the goal for them isn't necessarily to win the golf tournament. It's just to see if they can play four rounds in a major championship that they went through qualifying to get to, and there he is.
How about Fowler's meltdown? What do you have, five bogeys and a double?
Fowler did not look good today. You know, I hung out a lot today on 17 green, and I saw him coming through, and he had that look like he was trying to hold it together. He was trying to sort of like go back to his experience and really just maintain composure. And I think he did that, but the game was just loose, where everything looked really good and easy yesterday, where he's hitting fairways, hitting greens. He was not doing that today. You know, really struggling to sort of maintain his, you know, his game, his composure. It's hard, Scott, and you and I have talked about this before, to put four really good rounds together. So far, Gary Woodland, in my opinion, has got two, you know, one really good round, one great round, one that's special. But it's going to be something for him to come back and back that up tomorrow. This could have been Fowler's hiccup kind of a round. If he's able to right the ship and put together something, he can move back up. Because I just don't think that there's going to be anybody who's going to go out there and shoot multiple 65s or a 65 and a 66 in some kind of combination with a couple other ones. It's just too challenging. It's just too challenging out there. So I think that if this were the hiccup round for Fowler, you know, he's made the cut. If you've made the cut at a U.S. Open, you've got a chance. But he's got some work to do on Saturday for sure.
Let me just say, from my end, he's finished. You can't go – you cannot shoot a six over and not go to bed having nightmares and flashbacks and cold sweats. When you drop a 77, that's Pharrell-type numbers. I mean, that's terrible. He's not going to recover from that. Let's go to Phil's round was bizarre. How crazy good was this? The ugliness of, like, four bogeys, but then six birdies. He was all over the place, but it was so exciting watching him play, and everybody's getting behind him. That's for sure.
Mickelson is always exciting. You know, when he crashes and burns and shoots 75 or 76, it's exciting. He does give you a show. When he's got it together and he's playing some good golf and all of a sudden some putts start falling, some of those crazy shots, you know, a bird grabs the ball, he ends up getting it back, makes birdie on it. Of course, that's a totally film move. Some real questions with strategy off the tee, and then all of a sudden, you know, on 14, he's hitting drives, and he's going to the rough, he's able to come back, and he's all over the place. And that's the way that he's always played. That's the way that he's just not afraid to do it. He's in the Hall of Fame at this point. He wants to win this tournament badly. You know, I don't know that it's going to be necessarily his year. I still, you know, I told you a couple days ago when we were previewing this, I'm not a believer in Mickelson over the course of four rounds. I'm still not. But Phil Mickelson is one of those people that has been able to create roars out there. And I don't know if it's because people are chilly, because it's Northern Cali and they're all laid back, but there haven't been a lot of roars out there on the golf course. I can tell you I've spent a lot of time on Pebble Beach over the last 2 days with fans who are watching the golf, and it's not like, and maybe this isn't a fair comparison, when we're at Augusta National, you hear cheers and roars all over the place. Things are happening left, right, and center. U.S. Opens aren't like that. U.S. Opens drain the energy and drain the juice out of the players. And to some degree, I wonder if it's happening to the fans as well, because they just, I haven't been hearing it. I haven't felt the buzz going yet. Now, we'll see what happens on the weekend when all of a sudden it starts to really matter and the chips are pulling, sort of getting pushed in the middle of the table. But Phil Mickelson is one of those guys who can create some of that. And some of the shots that he hits, just people are just in awe of it. And he's always a great show.
So David Dusinger golfing with us. DJ had a nice 69 today, and he had about four birdies, a couple bogeys. But I thought he played really well after, you know, the 3-4 stumble. And then from that point in, what does he got to do to make up the seven strokes and be there on Sunday? Because I think his game is right there knocking on the door.
He's got to putt better. You know, it's one of those things where, like, he's hitting his irons so well, Scotty, but he's getting absolutely nothing out of his short game, and his putter's killing him. He could have had two or three more birdies easily today. He's making nothing short. The 4 to 8 foot range at this point is killing him. Right now there's a stat that we look at to measure how well somebody's putting. It's called strokes gained putting. And basically, if you have a number that's positive, that means that you're somebody who's better than the field. You're gaining strokes. You're putting really well. If you're negative, you're losing them. Right now, he's giving up more than 1.1 strokes for every 18 holes out there. He's giving away strokes on the greens. He's got to stop that. You cannot win a U.S. Open if you can't roll in putts.
So of all the Rose, Oosthuizen, and Rory, because those are the three that we know are going to be heavily involved in Saturday and Sunday, I mean, I got to be honest. I'm rooting for Rory. There's just something about his game. I love the way he's playing. I told you that the way he came out of the Canadian was sickening. That Saturday, Sunday, 1500 was sick. So I thought he played, you know, to recover from a double at 14 and go birdie, birdie after that, you got big onions to be able to step and forget about that double. Most Fowler went down the toilet after his bad shots. And then this guy comes back with birdie, birdie. He's the guy I think has a crack.
I think that he is the highest ceiling as far as, like, what kind of good round could he put together. He also has the lowest floor. If Rory goes bad, he could shoot 80 tomorrow. Like, it's going to be a really difficult setup, I think, tomorrow. I'm convinced scoring is going to be challenging on Saturday. It always is at the U.S. Open. And Rory has a propensity every once in a while to throw in some big numbers. All of a sudden, a triple or a quad comes in. He can get down on himself. He is also somebody who can throw five birdies together and absolutely throw lightning at the field. And I think that Rosie is going to keep plodding along and doing his thing. I look for him to shoot, you know, 69 or 70, a couple under par, and just sort of stay the course. That's the way that he goes. Louis Oosthuizen is another guy who a lot of times just flies under the radar, and you're looking like, oh, he shot 66, 70 in his solo third right now. Yeah, that's the way he goes. But if you're looking for somebody to really make a jump, Rory McIlroy at 5 under par, 4 shots behind Woodland, he is the guy that I think could go out and get himself a really good number tomorrow. But I worry also that he is the potentially the guy amongst the three you just mentioned who could shoot a big number and knock himself out.
I can't believe that I saw, I think it was Louis had 6 bogeys, and then he had like 8 birdies or something like this. And I'm sitting there watching this guy. I mean, he literally, because they had said at one point he's working on his posture. And I thought to myself as I was watching him swing, I go, this guy literally has the most beautiful non-body movement swing I've ever seen. He just literally, I mean, he's almost, it's like a feather. He swings like a feather and does, I mean, there's not all this wild whipping of the golf club and speed and all this torque and all these guys fall, like literally falling over when they go big ball. This guy, it's all about that easy swing. It is beautiful. I can't wait to talk to you on Monday night. David Dusick, enjoy the weekend at Pebble, rounds 3 and 4, Father's Day. For all the marbles, Brooks Koepka's still in it. It's going to be a great U.S. Open this weekend. Thanks for coming on the bench.
Talk to you soon, Scotty. Thanks a lot.
All right, David Dusick of Golf Week.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
All right, so 855-212-4227 is the number to get on the bench. All right, David in Buffalo, you're on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, Scott, thanks for taking my call tonight, man.
Yeah,
dude, the U.S. Open is going to be great this weekend. It's a great leaderboard, great golf course. Woodland played phenomenal today, but there's so many guys nipping right at his heels. And I agree with you about McIlroy, man. The way he came into this tournament, he's got so much confidence. The whole year, his mental attitude has been so good. You know, I feel like this is his tournament to win. I think he can go out over the weekend, and I think if he can play smart and, you know, not let little things beat him up, like you said, after that double bogey, he bounced right back. Koepka's still right there, too, man. That guy is a machine in the majors. This is going to be a fun weekend, dude. I'll tell you one thing. It proves, again, you don't need an 8,000-yard golf course to make these tournaments entertaining. So, you enjoy the tournament this weekend, and talk to you on Monday night, bud.
Hey, one thing I wanted to say to you, David, real quick. Did you see Patrick Reed have that snap his club?
I did not. No, I didn't catch that.
All right, so he had a bad day. He was 2 over, had a 73, whatever. And he, I think it was on 18 or something. He just absolutely snapped his wedge right in half after he chunked a shot. And he was livid. And then I think his next shot, he had to like use a sand wedge or something. All I know is, it's always fun to see one of them, get angry. You know what I mean? Like that guy just took the club. Did you see it, Mavi, when he snapped the club? It was pretty cool. Usually, you know,
something I would pull on the golf course.
You know what I mean? Like throw a club, break a club, snap a club, drink a club soda.
Honestly, I'm sure there's lots of people being, oh, it's a terrible, terrible thing for the kids to see. Like, you don't want to set that kind of example, but I like it because I like when these guys actually show emotion, because otherwise golf on the weekends is just a good thing for me to nap to. But when you actually have the passion and the emotion that you see in other sports, I like that. I don't want to see some guy all, you know, in his polo and his freshly pressed, you know, khaki pants, just quietly tapping the ball in. And
did you see,
just like, have some excitement, some fun.
Did you see Justin Thomas's pants today, rocking those blue and black spotted pants? What was that action he had going?
No idea. I didn't see it.
So, sounds like you didn't watch any of the golf today.
Not yet. I don't usually watch till like Saturday or Sunday. I'm sure I'll have to watch a bunch of it Sunday because we're
Tiger,
going to my girlfriend's parents' house, and he loves watching the golf, and I always nap.
Tiger is doing really average in this tournament, and he's very upset at himself for where he is. I think he's like even or something like that.
Pebble Beach is one of the ones that he usually rules, right? So it's a little, I'm sure it's very disappointing for him.
Well, he's had a tremendous amount of success there for sure, but he's even. He was plus one today, 72. He went 70-72 in the two rounds. But, I mean, he's in it. He's 32nd. I would say, you know, he's 9 shots off. And so, he's not winning anything. I just don't see it. Now, tomorrow he'd have to have a gigantic day. I mean, I really feel like if you're at 2, you're alive. And then how about Sergio? He's been disastrous since he won the Masters, right? He's 3 under. He shot a 70 today, 69-70. Went pretty solid. He had a chance for eagle, I think I said at the start of the show, right? He missed a little 12-footer for eagle that would have given him another stroke. Graham McDowell, that guy was ready to quit golf. Quit golf. He was so bad. He was ranked over 200th in the world. And then he decided against quitting, and he went at it again and busted his ass. And here he is again. Now, this guy won the thing, I think, in 2010 at the same golf course, if you remember. Graham McDowell, the Irishman, is back 3 under. He went 69-70 Thursday, Friday. Zach Johnson is 3-under. John Rahm is 3-under, and he was playing terrible golf at the beginning of the round. He bogeyed 3 of the first 6 holes, and then the rest of the way he had 4 birdies. And our boy Scott Piercy of Vegas, 67 yesterday, 72 today. He's 3-under. Adam Scott's 3-under. Brooks Koepka, 4-under. He went back-to-back 69s. He had 1 bogey, 3 birdies on the day. Cooch is 4-under. There you go. Jay Reavy. How about Reavy Sori? You remember him? I doubt anyone remembers him. Let me ask you this question, Sam the Butcher. You were in there wallowing in your baseball team's problems. The Marlins are your team, and they are atrocious, as you know. And they got beat by the Pirates tonight. What was it, 11-0?
Yeah, that's right, 11-0. 11 big ones.
So, 24-43? Is that what their record is?
44 tonight's loss.
They're 3-7 in the last 10. But do you think that they're so they're 12-24 at home, 12-19 on the road. They're actually better on the road. And in their division, they're 9-22. They're terrible. In the, against the West, they're 6-4. Let me ask you this: like, so you've always rooted for them? And what did you go? You went to Miami?
I'm from South Florida.
Well, yeah, so I live down there, too. You know I'm a Canes fan. So you're Canes, Marlins, Dolphins, everything, all?
Everything. Panthers, Heat.
Panthers, Heat, all of it.
All of it.
So you like the Marlins?
Yeah, I do. I root for them, and I struggled through it, except last week in Milwaukee. It blew out the Brewers. We had 11-run inning.
I saw that.
Best inning of the year.
That was good. So there's some bright spots. Do you ever go home and go to the games there?
No, I won't go there. I don't go back to the old side of the Orange Bowl.
Well, that's also a cardinal sin. I agree with that. So you won't go there because of that they put it at the Orange Bowl.
That's correct. And I'm not going to that football game this year against FIU that they're playing at that stadium.
Are they playing it at the Marlins Park?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're playing it there.
So
FIU home game. They moved it to Marlins Park.
So the FIU Panthers are playing, Florida International's playing the Canes at that place, and FIU's the home team?
That's correct.
That's even more of a felony, right? Do you think that Manny Diaz will do a great job at Miami? Are you buying in?
Yes, I'm buying into Manny, but I'd love to actually see what he can do once he's in charge because, I mean, the team was great the past couple of years because of his defense.
Right.
Because let's be real, Rozier, whatever you want to call him, not a good quarterback. And the defense
Neither's
led that
Perry.
Team. No, Perry's not the guy either. I think they're going to have the same struggle this year on offense that they had the last 3 years.
So Perry's still there, right?
Yeah, he's still there.
So he'll back up this new kid from Ohio State?
And from what I was reading, the new kid from Ohio State was not good at all during spring practice. Perry was head and shoulders above him.
Really?
Zero accuracy on this kid, apparently, from Tate Martell.
Tate Martell was terrible.
That's what I read. The arm strength was lacking, and his accuracy wasn't that great.
But wasn't
either.
He the guy that they were getting that was going to turn the program around? Is that not what they said, that this was the greatest thing ever, that they got this kid?
Yeah, it is, but you and I both know this. Everyone who comes to Miami in the last 10 years has been the greatest kid ever, and what have they done?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
They don't win big games.
They don't win games.
They beat Notre Dame. Remember that night? They looked great that night.
Once. Okay, night.
That was the one good night. So you don't believe in them anymore. You've turned on my Canes, it sounds
no,
like.
No, I believe in them. I'm not turning on them. I'm not going anywhere. I'm still going to Miami, Florida in a couple months down in wherever we're playing. I think it's Orlando. I'm not giving up on them. I sat outside in the cold at that brutal game against Wisconsin a couple months ago here at Yankee Stadium.
Was that the pinstripe ball?
Yeah, that was a miserable night.
Didn't they get whacked?
30-3.
What could be worse?
I've taken my girlfriend to 2 Hurricanes games. ACC championship against Clemson, Pinstripe Bowl against Wisconsin. She's never seen a Hurricanes touchdown in person.
And they got blown out in both.
She's not allowed it back.
And what is she? Does she think you're a loser, that your team can't score a touchdown?
She loves it. None of my teams do anything. We went to a Flyers-Panthers game. They knocked us all over the place.
Is she from Florida too?
Nah, she's a Philly girl, so she's still riding that Eagles Super Bowl.
How did you? But she lives in New York?
No, Philly.
Oh, so your girlfriend lives in Philly? Would you drive down there?
I live there too. I drive up here to work.
Oh, that's right. So wait, you commute here to this job?
Yo, I usually when I come, I have something here, and then I have other stuff in the area. So I spend like the whole weekend here, and I work three different things.
Three different jobs?
Yeah, pretty much.
Are they all in radio?
No, the others are TV.
Oh, really? What TV do you do?
So tomorrow I'll be working the Major League Lacrosse big game of the week between the New York Lizards and the Chesapeake Bay Hawks.
Right. And what's that on? You don't even know.
I know. I show up, I run the graphics, and then I go home.
Right. And then what's the other gig?
The other one is, it's not going right now. It's just other TV stuff similar to that where I'll come in and do games. On that gig, I worked the Wilder fight a couple weeks ago.
Right. So I've done those. I did the Wild. We went to Wilder Fury in L.A. We're going to Pacquiao Thurman July 20th at Vegas MGM.
And Fury's going to stomp this guy tomorrow, won't he?
I would think so, but there's been a lot of crazy upsets lately and a lot of things that everyone thought was so automatic didn't go that way, like Ruiz.
Yeah, but that Wilder fight against Brazil, that went the way everyone thought it was going to go.
I mean, he just knocked that guy's head off. And then I thought Triple G knocked that guy Roll's head off. So we'll see. I think Fury will kill him tomorrow, Schwartz. I think that one's on ESPN+. Plus. So at least there is a fight tomorrow night. No UFC Mafia for the first time. It's the first day they haven't had a card in 7 years tomorrow.
That is correct.
They have a fight card every day of the week for 7 years in a row. The UFC always has a fight every night of your life, a card with 30 fights on it every night. There's no getting around it. They're going to have more fights than Major League Baseball games, 162 cards a year for the UFC. Anyway, let's go to the Billy Idol Hour of Love.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.